Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, it's been another crazy week. It started slowly since my last show last Tuesday, and I said, gee, nothing exciting is happening. And then all of a sudden, the last few days, everything broke loose. All hell broke loose. We're going to touch upon some of these things which occurred, which I find interesting, and I hope you will. If you want to call in and leave a message or chat with me, the number is 646-478-5731. I repeat, 646-478-5731. The number is on the screen in front of you. I am going to start this week's show with several items involving banks and big corporations. I'm talking now about the 1% as opposed to the 99%. Let's start with Timothy Geithner, Tim Geithner. You remember who he was. Under Bush 2, he was the president of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. He was in the federal system, and then before that government system most of his life. He said he was not a banker. Now, I don't know what the hell he was. He was the president of the numero uno bank, one, the number one bank in the United States, Federal Reserve Bank out of New York City. He's the biggest of the big. They loan, the Federal Reserve Banks loan money to the banks. Big deal, okay? And he was there with Bush, too, at the start of our crisis, the mortgage crisis and everything else. Then when President Obama was elected, he looked to and designated Tim Geithner to be his Secretary of the Treasury. I thought this was a major mistake at the time, and I still do. And time, I believe, has proven me correct and a lot of other people who thought the way I did. The banks were the ones who got us in trouble. The banks screwed up with the mortgage stuff, and we went into a recession. Millions of people have lost their homes. We're still not out of this recession, though things are getting better, but we're not out of it. We've lost our middle class during this time. The only ones making money are the banks and big companies, none of the little guys. And I think along the way, what everything Geithner did was to help the banks, because he was a banker. And his point of view, and I'm sure he thought this was correct, that the only way you could save this country from a recession was to save the banks. You're saving the thieves. You know, they got caught with their hand in the till. But yet we're going to save them, because if you don't, the country's going to be in trouble. Well, the country's still in economic trouble, except for the bankers and the big corporations they work with directly. Why are we talking about Geithner tonight? Because yesterday he published a book. He's going to make more money now, a couple of million on the book. It's called Stress Test, and it covers his time as head of the Federal Reserve, but more so as the Secretary of the Treasury for President Obama. I have not read the book. Let me be straight with you. I haven't gotten the book yet. It just came out yesterday. I have read excerpts from the book. The newspapers yesterday and today, the internet is full of quotes and passages from the book. And I've tried to read everything I could find. And I feel qualified to make the following observations without having read the entire book. Okay? Why was he a mistake? Let me start that way again. He never understood the problem because he was a banker and the banks had caused the problem. He could not see this, okay? He was too cozy with the banks. I mean, his country club friends were bankers. They stuck together. He was the wrong man for the job when Obama appointed him for that reason. He took care of the bankers because he was a banker. I know I'm being repetitious, but I have to be. And he continued. I think he contributed greatly to the 1% and the 99% division in this country because of the way he favored the banks as opposed to the people. Two interesting quotations from his book. The first is, and I quote, "You have to do things that look deeply unfair." He was referring, obviously, to his time as Secretary of the Treasury. I repeat, you have to do things that look deeply unfair. It looks like you're rewarding the arsonist. He sure did. Yeah, I mean, the country's burning down, and the banks are Nero fiddling while Rome burns. The banks survived. Nero survived. Rome did not. And the people of the United States did not. The other quote out of the book that I find amusing is that, quote, the most important, unquote, most important thing that he had to do was to prevent a depression, an economic depression, a recession. Well, he thinks he did. He thinks he prevented a depression, a recession. And why? Because the bank survived. This guy's got blinders on. He doesn't understand that while he saved the banks did not take care of the people. He did not take care of the people. So Geithner's book is going to get a lot of comments in the next couple of weeks. I am going to read it. I may have more to say. By the way, the general criticism of the book is along the lines I am sharing with you tonight. This guy don't know what the hell he's talking about. He's from another world. I want to share with you a study that recently came out. And we have a problem with offshore accounts. Our corporations, United States corporations, as a practical matter, they make their money. They have this big profit. But they incorporate themselves in the Bahamas, in Turkey, in some European country that nobody knows about and has a small tax on any income. And any profits they make, they put in those bank accounts. They're called offshore profits, offshore deposits. And they do this so they do not have to pay taxes, United States taxes. They don't have to support their government that made it possible for them to make this money, okay? And then what happens is they can't bring the money back, okay, unless it's for real estate purposes. So that money just keeps building up. Right now, the top 15 companies, all right, have $1 trillion in offshore accounts. That's profit money. Never paid taxes on $1 trillion offshore accounts. The top five, and you will know them all, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, Merck, and Apple. I'm going to talk more about drug companies in a few minutes, and Pfizer and Merck are right in there. But these cats have $1 trillion sitting in offshore accounts. We need money in this country. I'm going to tell you again, this country is run by the taxes paid by the poor people, by the little people, by the 1%, the 99%, I'm sorry, by the 99%, I apologize, I misspoke. And if I misspoke earlier on the numbers, I apologize again. The 99% are the ones who support this country. The 1% don't throw any money, though they make more money than the 99% combined. Okay, let's stay with banks generally. The big banks in this country, the big banks in the world, are making a ton of money laundering drug money. Drug money, illegally gotten gain. You know, and here's how it's working, okay? Remember now what happened with the banks. They were too big to fail, too big to prosecute. Here's an example where they're too big to nail and they're too big to prosecute. What's happening? Mexico. There are drug cartels. We know this. Mexico's loaded with drug cartels. It's the entrance way to the United States for all kinds of drugs. The drug cartels in Mexico, okay, are earning $20 to $30 billion a year from drugs sold on the streets of the United States, not drugs sold anywhere else in the world. In the United States alone, they're making between $20 and $30 billion a year. Now, they can't just take that money and bring it into the United States because it's illegally gotten gain, so it has to be laundered, has to be clean, so it looks like clean money. They can spend it, and the government's not going to get on their ass. So what happens is this. The money is deposited in Mexican banks. These are Mexican drug lords. They deposit their money in Mexican banks. These Mexican banks, though, are branches of American banks or international banks, which have offices. okay, had banks in the United States and elsewhere in the world. Once that money goes into the Mexican bank, it automatically is part of the system in the United States, okay? And then they can move the money around or take the money out because it's been cleaned. It's not the money that was deposited in Mexico. It's new money, but it really represents the same amount in the old money, but now the money is considered clean and they take the money out. The banks know they're being used by the drug lords for laundering purposes, but they don't care. And the reason the banks don't care is, well, number one, because they're whores, but put that aside. They don't care because they're making too much money off this. You know how the banks charge you and me for every little thing they do. Can you imagine how they're ripping off the drug lords? Because the drug lords know we can't keep 100 cents in the dollar, so the banks are grabbing a percentage, and the lords say, okay, the drug lords, we got to clean the money, better 75 cents on the dollar, whatever it is, and you get the other quarter. One bank alone, to give you an example how this thing works, is HSBC. They are a British-based bank. They have offices all over the United States and in Mexico. I talked about them 6 months ago on the show. They got in trouble for something else big time and paid a big penalty. Anyhow, they made, in 1 year, last year, $2.6 billion in revenue just off laundering money that was deposited in Mexico into their United States branches. Their revenue, the amount of money they made for handling those billions of dollars was $2.6 billion. And they're crying out, as are the other banks, you can't blame us that this is drug money. Really, we don't know it's drug money, and we're just providing a service and should not be penalized. I say bullshit. I'm sorry to put it that way, because they know they're dealing with drug lords, or they wouldn't have all this money coming into their bank. They should know better, and I think they're being complicit in a part of the drug trade by laundering the money. Yes, I believe this. And they should be completely liable. They should be charged criminally for doing this because they're helping to keep the drug trade going. If you can't spend the money you're making, you can't get it into circulation, there's no sense in making billions of dollars as the drug lords are. This is the primary way they clean the money. They know they should be complicit and they should be criminally liable, but we don't do this. Because, you know, our hustle representatives, whether they're Democrat or Republican, they take care of the people who support them. And the banks support our legislators big time. So their eyes are turned. They don't see. They don't want to see what they should see. Now, let me talk about drug companies for a moment. This is going to blow your mind also. America, the United States, makes up 5% of the world's population. We are 5% of the total world's population. However, we buy 50% of the pharmaceutical drugs sold in the world. 5% of the population, but we buy 50% of the drugs that are produced by big business, the pharmaceutical houses, worldwide. Something's wrong that we take personally, each of us take so many pills and drugs. Jeff Hayes recently did a documentary film, Doctored, that covers this situation. And this is the same. It's the same with all of them. They push drug prices. They make the drug prices big. Do you know, if you're in Canada and Europe, you can buy any drug you're buying in this country, a prescription drug, a hell of a lot cheaper than you can buy it in the United States. And do you further know, we are prohibited by law in most instances from buying our prescription drugs from Canada or from a foreign country because the pharmaceutical houses got these laws passed so they don't lose the big dollar business here in the United States. And the big drug pushers are American companies. They're American companies. Merck, Pfizer, I mentioned them earlier, Roche, Abbott, Eli Lilly. Now, totally, there are exactly 12 pharmaceutical houses in this country, corporations, drug companies, that make the pills, okay, that cost you and I, the American people, millions of dollars. Let me give you an example. Abbott drug. One drug they make, Humira, is an inhibitor. It causes cancer tumors not to grow. It prevents the growth. It inhibits the growth of cancer tumors. Very important drug. Very expensive. People need it. They don't want to die. Last year alone, they sold $9.3 billion worth of Humira pills. Now, I can't believe that couldn't have cost a third of that, and they're still making a big profit, $3 billion. They're pigs, just like the banks. The pharmacy houses are pigs. And I'll tell you something else. They get a break. Obama has treated the bankers well because he put them in positions of power and they took care of themselves. He has also taken care of the drug companies. Obamacare does not do enough for people, especially elders, who have to buy prescription drugs. And we buy a lot of them. I'm 78. I got three different heart problems. I know what I'm paying out there for drugs. Even with the Medicare plan and my supplemental plan, I still have to go into my pocket. This isn't fair. And the problem is this, I'm not going to explain it, but there's a donut hole. If you buy enough drugs, you understand what the donut is, and you get screwed when you reach it. Obama's proud that by the year 2020, under Obamacare, the donut problem will be diminished considerably. It should have been done now. He took care of the drug companies. And I think the reason he did was he didn't want them fighting him on Obamacare. And that's why he did it. Maybe it's a good reason, but we're getting screwed. The drug companies continue to make big money. Now, I'm done. I've knocked the banks. I've knocked the drug companies. I've knocked the major corporations who were making huge profits and depositing them in offshore accounts. But it's the truth. So I'm really not knocking them. Now I want to give you an historical man, a man of history, a person we are all proud of in this country, who got screwed by the banks during his time and died broke. I just wrote a column on this for the local newspaper last week. It came out last Wednesday it came out at 5 o'clock. I wrote an article on Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson, third president of the United States. Prior to that, he was a vice president. He was the first secretary of state of the United States. He was ambassador to France. He founded and arranged the financing to establish West Point. Did I say he's the father of the Declaration of Independence? He wrote the Declaration of Independence. We all know he's a big man in the history of our country. Abraham Lincoln himself said he is the, up to his time, we're talking Abe Lincoln's time, Jefferson was the outstanding politician of the time. Well, Jefferson died poor. And the reason he was born to money, but he didn't know how to handle money. They say he could not balance his checkbook. He used to spend, and he spent, a lot of us do this, he spent more than he was taking in all the time, and he ended up dying broke. When he died, his last days in bed were not spent with his family reminiscing on happier times and happier days. They were spent with him trying to balance his books, trying to see how he could save some estate for his family. He saved nothing. The banks took everything to pay off the debt. The banks took everything. He couldn't even keep Monticello, the beautiful home he built. His daughter had to sell it to pay off his debts. The poor man at 83 died broke, one of the greatest presidents in the history of the United States. And I'm going to tell you, if you read back on his history, you will find he hated banks, he despised banks, and he said, and I printed this quote, and I've written about it. I'm not quoting it directly right now. But if he said, if in this country, we ever let the banks take control of things, where they control inflation, deflation, credit, and everything else, we're going to reach a point where we're going to wake up someday, and we ain't going to have nothing, the people. And our children are also not going to have the homes they grew up in. Their homes are going to be gone. What happened, my friends? The banks control inflation. They control credit. They control deflation. People are broke. Millions of people lost their homes in this mortgage recession. And Banks are bad people. He said the banks would be worse than a standing army that tried to take over the United States. The man knew, and the man got screwed like a lot of people are suffering these days in the United States. Now let's move out of that kind of stuff and go to something which I find interesting also, perhaps you will. I'm going to talk first about the Oklahoma execution that was botched 2 weeks ago. Clayton Lockett, bad guy, 19 years ago, shot a girl in the face with two other guys and then watched while his two friends buried her alive. He should have been dead 19 years ago. They should have cut his testicles off, but he has rights. And he beat the system till now, and he was going to be executed 2 weeks ago. And the day before his execution, his attorneys argued this. We now execute people by shooting drugs into their veins. And a new drug was being used in Oklahoma, but the state said, we don't have to tell you what drug we're going to use on you. Well, his lawyer said that doesn't make sense, because the Eighth Amendment of the United States Constitution says even a guy who's going to be executed has a right to be free from cruel and inhuman or unusual treatment. But if we don't know what the drug is, we can't have it determine how it's going to react in the body and whether this person is going to suffer while he's being executed. Now, you may think they should suffer anyhow, but these are the rules, and we live by the rules in this country. They put this man down. He had three shots. He was going to get three shots. The first one's supposed to put him to sleep so he feels nothing. The second one kills the pain even more. The third one kills him. Well, they got the first one in, and something happened with his veins. 16 minutes after he was shot, he's moaning and groaning. He's still alive. He did not die till 43 minutes later. They even took the tubes out, because the vein had busted. They withdrew everything, but he died 43 minutes later of a heart attack, and he was awake apparently during all this time suffering. The state of Oklahoma said, we're not going to have any more executions for 6 months. We have to see what we're going to do. Here's how we got into this position. Most European nations do not have the death penalty. They frown on it big time over there. We do. Initially, companies here would make, we call it a cocktail, these three different drugs that are put together to kill somebody when you want to execute them legally. But the American company said there's no profit in this. There's not enough money to be made. So it ended up with European countries, and all of them stopped doing it because they thought it was not proper since their country did not believe in the death penalty. Why should they make a profit off something like this? And some little company in London was the only company in the world making the drug that would kill somebody that we were executing here in the United States. That company finally said, we don't like doing this. This is wrong. It's against the public policy of England. We're not going to do it anymore. So what do? This is about 3 or 4 years ago. The states went crazy. They didn't have any more drugs to kill guys with or kill people with. Texas had a lot, but they wouldn't give theirs away. They wouldn't share it with any other state because Texas, historically, every year, executes more people than any other state in the union. Okay? Very simple. They're big on executions in Texas. They don't screw around. Last year, several states started one shot, and what they used for that one-shot cocktail was whatever the veterinarians use to euthanize a dog. That's what they were killing human beings with. For some reason, they're not doing that anymore. So they're looking for the right cocktail, but all of a sudden the states say, we don't want to tell you what the cocktail is because you're only going to go to court and we're going to have to spend more money fighting it. But that's the way it is. I mean, we're purportedly a nation of laws, and that's the way it should be, and we ain't doing it. We're creating more litigation, and I don't care what the hell this guy Clayton Lockett did. It was wrong for him to be on that table for 46 minutes and then die of a heart attack. And there's something else. I think we should get rid of the death penalty, and you should too. I told you about a study 3 weeks ago that came up. It is estimated that of every 25 people executed in the United States, one of those persons is innocent. That's why I'm against the death penalty. My whole legal career I've been against it because I know the system is imperfect. Whether you rob a car or you kill somebody, you go to jail or you're going to be executed, innocent people get convicted. Our legal system's not perfect. It may be the best there is, but it's not perfect, and we should not execute people for that reason. Let me talk to you about three lesbian women. They're married together, three lesbian women. I mean, we're fighting all over this country for gay rights and gay marriages recognized. I am unaware of any state that permits marriage to be more than two people. Now we have three people, three lesbians. Their names are Doll, Kitten, and Bayan. Bayan, B-O-I-N-N. They're all from Massachusetts, 27 to 34 years old. I saw pictures of them, absolutely beautiful women. They got married last August. Two of them were married legally, and then the other one joined them, and they had an illegal or improper service joining them together as husband and wives, the three of them. So they're three married lesbians. They consider themselves one unit. Now they want to be pregnant, and the way they're going to do it is this. Each of them is going to get pregnant one at a time, and each one is going to have a child. So each will experience the joy of birth and will have a child. Kitten's the first one. She's 27. She's pregnant right now. She's due in July. And the way they do it is they don't have sex. They get a sperm donor, and they have it put into them, you know, through the IVF process. Not bad. And their goal is to have three children, one by each of them. By the way, the pictures I saw, all three of them at the wedding ceremony in white bridal gowns with their fathers in tuxedos. I want to talk about judges a little bit for a few minutes here. I think judges in the whole world are getting more and more screwed up. I start with the United States Supreme Court. I'm sorry, the conservative bloc is too political. Many of their decisions are politically motivated, and that is not correct. Remember the statue of justice. Justice is blind. Her eyes are covered. We're not that way anymore. Things are wrong in this country when it comes to our judiciary, especially the United States Supreme Court. But I want to go to Egypt now. Egypt. They're crazy. Remember 3 or 4 years ago, they had the revolution in the square, and our country said, woo, this is terrific. We got rid of, what's his name, the leader. We said we got to have democracy. The guy was our friend for 30 years. And at one point, they've had about three presidents, I think, or four different governments since then. The Muslim Brotherhood took over, real tough people. And after about a year in power, they got knocked out of power. And recently, an Egyptian court sentenced Mohammed Badi, who was the political leader of that party, the Muslim Brotherhood, and 682 of the Muslim Brotherhood supporters to death. 683 people sentenced to death in one courtroom. Now, that is not the way to play politics. You don't kill your enemy. You let them live to fight you another day in an election. But this is what's happening. Now, just think this. Suppose Abraham Lincoln, after the Civil War, said, Jefferson Davis, Lee, and all the Confederate soldiers, we're going to put them to death because they fought against the United States, against the Union. You don't do that. The problem is there's no Abraham Lincoln in Egypt. I could go on. I got stories about Pakistan and a Spanish judge who's really getting screwed because he sent a banker to jail. But I will save those for another day, perhaps next week. This is basically the show for this week. I hope you have enjoyed it. The show is archived, as you know, and I know at least 2,000 of you listened to this during the course of the week. It's also on YouTube. You can find it there. Remember, I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. It was published in December. If you like this show, you'll like the book. If you don't like the show, you will not like the book. Don't buy it. And that's about it. I appreciate your joining me again this week. And I look forward to talking with you again next week. That's it, folks. We are all done.